What's up and welcome to Ahead of the Curve. This is your host, Jonathan Gellner, and thank you so much for joining us today. On today's show, we have on Phil Sibuhar, hitting coach and assistant coach at Charlotte. Phil is going into his third season at Charlotte, where he has helped develop and assisted Charlotte's vision in being a college program centered around player development and building teams that compete in June. Coming off of Charlotte's Conference USA Championship and their second NCAA tournament appearance in the last 3 years, Sibuhar and company at Charlotte look to continue to build that vision. Phil has had previous stops at the University of Arkansas as a graduate assistant and time in professional baseball with the Cleveland Guardians. On today's show, we talk about his offensive culture this past season. We could discuss fall pillars of development, styles of batting practice and prep work, and we take a deep dive into a discussion on timing, training tools, and simplifying information. You're going to love this episode with Phil Sibuhar. Phil, welcome to the show.
How's it going?
Oh, it's a beautiful day in Zebra Land. How's it over in the Carolinas?
Oh, it's beautiful, man. You know, this time of year is great. You know, wish we'd be playing baseball still, but, we're enjoying the summer. We're, you know, high rolling and we're getting after it for next year.
No doubt. Well, you guys had an awesome season and, especially offensively. I know Rob does a great job with pitchers. He's, you know, a pitching guy by heart, and I'm sure you have a ton of responsibility, you know, just building the offensive culture. And you guys have a great staff too, but I really want to dig into, you know, what you guys did this past year that you felt like was really impactful. And, you know, you're looking back, you're going, okay, we'd love to be in Omaha, of course. And you guys had a really good team, but you're looking back going, okay, I feel like we did a few things really, really well with this group. You know, do you mind sharing a couple things like that with us?
Yeah, for sure. I think one of the big things with this group this year, you know, you kind of look at our roster and you kind of look at the history of Charlotte. You know, this was a group that wanted to leave a legacy. You know, you look at a couple of our starters up the middle of the field, Austin Knight and Jack Dragum, and, you know, those are both guys that we brought in the 2020 year where, you know, we were building a new program essentially. And, you know, Coach Woodard and Coach Bicknell were both bringing in new guys left and right. And, you know, we were building a team to compete in June. You know, we were adding pieces left and right, building the team to compete at a high level. And, you know, I think with this year's group, you know, you kind of look back in 2021 where, you know, we won Conference USA and we went to the NCAA tournament. And then, you know, the following year where, you know, we broke numerous amounts of records, you know, we set records with home runs in our program, you know, walks, runs per game. And then, you know, finally up until this year, like we brought a lot of those guys back. We had a bunch of 3-year guys that were in our lineup for 3 years. And I think the culture for this year's group was they wanted to leave a legacy, right? They wanted to go out. They wanted to be the best team that had ever played here at Charlotte, win the biggest games, go as far as anybody has gone. And I think that kind of resonated from August all the way on. You know, you look back through our season, it didn't go perfect by any means. And so as the kind of the season went on, you know, you kind of found ourselves battling adversity left and right. And, you know, the thing that we fell back on with every single hurdle and every single success that we had was we were a family. And, you know, we just kept going. We just kept playing. You know, at one point in May, we were 24-25. And, you know, we ended up winning seven elimination games at the back half of the year to eventually get ourselves to the conference championship and then get to play in June. And I think that was kind of the big thing for our culture this year was, you know, we wanted to leave a legacy. We believed in ourselves and we just never wavered. And, you know, you could use the word relentless. You could use the word fearless. You could use the word selfless. But I think ultimately, like, our guys just believed in one another. And that was kind of what resonated through this group this year.
I love hearing that. And, you know, it's something that I feel like if there's one thing that I try that I would love to be able to, you know, we talk about confidence, but if there was something that I could just inject in all of our players and just making sure that they were, you know, fearless or relentless, I think those would be really, you know, at the top of the list. So tell us a little bit, was it like recruiting the right guys? Did you guys really promote that? Like, if you're going to give me any advice on how I can do a better job of making sure that our players are like that, what would that be?
Well, I think it's the attitudes that we carry every day as coaches and the way that we interact with our players. you know, fearless, the definition of fearless is, you know, you're not afraid to die. You're not afraid to lose. You're not afraid to strike out. You know, facing adversity in the face is being fearless. And, you know, having that through our program, you know, we have the sign in the dugout that says fearless. You know, we have the sign in the locker room that says relentless. You know, we have all those things. But I think ultimately it's an attitude that the coaches carry. It's an attitude that the players carry. And when you have consecutive days in a row where you carry that, you believe that, and you're the same person every single day, I think it ultimately comes out.
Oh, I love that. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, you're prepping for the off season. You're going to be ready to go. You know, it seems like a short 2 months. But tell us a little bit about, you know, what you guys are going to continue to do from last year and some different things that you want to revamp based on, you know, things worked better here or there, or these are the players that we've got. And just kind of walk us through your idea of what your ideal offseason, especially starting, you know, August, September, what you guys are really going to hit on.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for us going into the fall is we're going to start with the end in mind. You know, you think of the end of the at-bat, you think of the end of the game, you think of the end of each situation that you're presented in the box. And I think for us going into the fall, a big focus for us next year is like, how can we integrate a two-strike approach or two-strike practice into every single day that we're on the field or we're in the cages? How can we implement a situational hitting aspect to our practice? How can we layer that in? How can we layer in the situations of the game that we're demanded to answer? And I think for us, you know, going into next year and continually evolving, right? Like, you know, you have good years, you have two good years in a row, but there's always something that you can improve on. And I think for us going into the fall, when we're able to kind of look at what actually matters, what is the game asking of us? Can we drive up a pitch count with two strikes? Can we get hits with two strikes? Can we win the two strike battle with a pitcher? Can we move the runner over from first? Can we bunt him over? Can we hit the ball in the dirt? Can we get the guy in from second when we need a run, when we're facing, you know, a tough Friday night arm? And so I think some of the things for us going into the fall this year is how can we implement that into practice, right? Can it be a two-strike BP round? Can it be a situational round? And, you know, tracking that, right? You know, a thing that we do here that, you know, it's something that I've seen a lot of value in is we track batting practice every single day. There's an execution to every single swing in BP. So that'd be 20 to 25 swings, you know, whatever your BP set is on the field. How many times are you actually executing that and keeping track of it? You know, it sounds very simple, but, you know, I think when you look up, like, your best hitters are the ones that execute in BP. Like, that's who I've been around. You know, that's at least me. But the guys that can execute every single swing or every single task in BP are usually your top hitters. And when you put value into BP, you put value into an execution in that setting, I think, you know, you stress the importance of it to the hitters, especially the young ones, the freshmen and the transfers that are first year guys in your program.
Sure.
But I also think that, you know, that having that over the course of the year and almost being like a indicator of who's doing well and who's not doing well, like the proof is in the pudding. Like if you can't hit BP, then, you know, you're most likely not going to be able to, you know, hit in a game for us here at Charlotte.
Well, tell us a little bit about how you set up BP. So I'm assuming, and I've seen from a lot of your videos, it's not just like you throwing from 30 feet, you know, nice and easy cookies every day. So kind of walk us through some of your favorite themes or your favorite ways to measure it. And, you know, remember, a lot of our coaches are similar to you. You know, we're high school, college coaches. We're trying to save time rather than add a ton of stuff, but we also want to be able to measure what matters. So kind of walk us through your process of, you know, making BP important, like you mentioned, but also, you know, how you guys compete or how you guys prepare for, you know, pitchers on any given weekend.
Yeah. So I think on a normal BP, right, like it changes day to day, you know, you're going to have some days that, you know, align with your pillars and what's important to your overall philosophy. Then there's also going to be days that are, you know, going to be aligned with the situations of what the game's asking. And so, you know, we have a round in every single BP that we take called team task. And essentially what that means is there's a task that we are trying to accomplish no matter what the practice is set up. Like if, you know, we have two big hacks out there that are throwing high spin fastballs, or if we have an arm BP that's throwing, you know, 50 mile per hour fastballs from 30 feet, I think having a team task round where we are aligned with, you know, is it a sack bunt day? Are we just getting sack bunts down because that's our team task? Or is it something is a little bit more specific as like, hey, it's a two out, you know, you're naming out the situation. That's a two out runner on third base. Like it's a game winning run. Like I described the situation to you and now it's your chance to execute it no matter what the practice setup is. So I think adding that layer into every single BP round that you can take, like just adds more context and more importance to getting the task done at hand. And, you know, that changes day to day, right? Like, you know, maybe we go through a stretch, you know, we went through a stretch this year where we really struggled driving a guy in from second with less than two outs. We just did. And so, you know, something that we needed to work on the next few days and the next few weeks of practice was, hey, our team task was your first round or your second round of the day is like, hey, we're driving this guy in from second because it's important. And that's what we need to do to win games, score runs and win games.
No, that's really good. And, you know, I think when, you know, when several years ago, I started to really focus on development and, you know, you think about that too. And that could be a couple of different directions of, okay, we want to develop our players, but we also want them to perform in games. And that's the biggest thing too, is like, okay, there's a runner at third with less than two outs. We need to score that guy like 80% plus of the time. So we got to practice it because, you know, especially with our high school guys, they want to be recruited. They want to be developed. And having a conversation of, if you help your team win, colleges want that. Like they want guys that are going to step in and go, okay, how do I help my team win today? You've got to be obviously good enough to be able to do that. But at the same time, guys that, you know, win type of situations like that all the time are the guys that are going to play. Because, you know, I don't want to rant on transfers and moving guys moving around all over the place. But you know the whole thing is if guys can step on campus and do the little things that you're asking them to do and to help their team win on any given day are very coachable. Those are the type of guys that, you know, that you're talking about. And so getting our guys bought into stuff like that is really paramount to, I think, their development as well. And I don't know if you're seeing that with the younger guys too, like you talked about getting them to understand that BP is really important. That's kind of that's a very fundamental thing in baseball, right? Like BP is fairly important, especially on-field BP with base runners and situations. And that's going to mimic a lot of what we see in the game of, okay, here's the approach that we need to have in this situation. And I love hearing that. Like I'm going to talk to our guys about that today and how important that is for you being a Division I hitting coach. And I think that's really important for them to understand as well.
Yeah. You know, everything matters, right? Like it's, you know, we're not just like, you know, we're not just taking 100 swings because we want to take 100 swings over the course of a week on the field to see ball flight. Like, you know, there's an importance to seeing ball flight, right? But everything we do should have a purpose to it. And I think whenever you can define what each task is and what everything's purpose is to the players, sure. Like yeah. they're going to believe it, they're going to be bought into it, and they're going to see the transfer of skill and ability because they know what they're trying to accomplish and they see the reason behind it.
Sure. No, I'm with you on that. That's good. With that, so, you know, we've talked about BP a little bit. I know that you guys, I know from the outside looking in, it seems like you guys are really big into like prep work and like in between rounds, like stuff. So I don't want to say like you're trying to gain inches, gain reps by doing stuff that doesn't necessarily involve like the only rounds that you have are hitting on field and that's it. So tell us a little bit about, you know, your prep work, how you guys are continuing to find reps for guys, even when they're not like in the box hitting off a machine on NBP. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. You know, I think the best way to look at it is like, you know, I don't think a lot of coaches like players standing around like wasted time. Like if you have four or five guys standing around a cage watching BP, like, you know, yeah, there's value to the camaraderie and there's value to the conversations. But, you know, in terms of time, like we're limited for time. And so there's a lot of time where we can add, you know, a hitting movement that our guys are focusing on, especially a group of guys into our BP round. So maybe, you know, maybe the rotation is you're hitting on the field and then your next round, you're base running, you're getting your live reps on base running. Then you come off, you have a sip of water, you have your, you know, hands around the cages, and then you're back into it with your hitting movement prepping for the next round of BP. You know, or it's, you know, we're working on bunting that day, like we're coming around the cages and we're getting our bunts in, you know. So to go back to your question about the prep work, you know, we try to incorporate prep work anywhere that we can. You know, our guys love the hitting movements that we have here. You know, we have a bunch of toys that guys can use. You know, it's almost like kind of a buffet now. With we feel like we have a lot of everything, almost everything that our guys can use. And if we don't have it, you know, we'll get it for them. But, you know, and that's also kind of catered to the player, right? You know, some guy might like to really, really swing an underload bat before he hops on the field, because he helps, it helps him feel like he's moving fast. He's getting his barrel turned and, you know, he's exploding through the baseball. Or it might be, you know, picking up a water bag because he's really feeling himself come off the baseball and he needs that water bag to almost reinforce the feel of swinging into the ball and holding his posture out over the plate. And so, you know, anytime that you can add those small details to practice, you know, I think that's beneficial. It's, you know, we like to have visual stations, during our BP as well. Like we like to have guys actually sit in the dugout, you know, almost have a time to meditate or visualize like what they're about to do during BP. And like that takes two rounds. It takes, you know, 4 to 5 minutes of BP. And if you just, you know, you look at your time, and you try to put in what's important to you and what's important to you that day.
Oh, that's really good. Do you guys, so one of the things that I'm always trying to balance is the amount of reps, but meaningful reps. And so like we look at, if we're going to, you know, if we're going to break the game down, you've got a pitcher who you usually see like four pitches and then you're, you know, you're sitting and you might swing twice, right? And so you're sitting and then you've got, you know, it could be 30 minutes before you get another at bat. Well, that doesn't really do very well for like the development of like swing, the skill of swinging, right? Or if we're trying to make their swing better, but it helps them to understand, okay, these are the different things that I need to do between at bats. So how do you kind of balance getting guys a lot of reps, which they need, but then also trying to mimic, you know, what happens most in a game, because we deal with cardio swings all the time, especially we're inside in January and it's, you know, it's freezing cold and we're trying to get them, you know, to not waste a lot of their time with 40 guys and three cages. Right. So really trying to figure out, okay, what's going to lead to the most success in a game. And it's gotta be a balance of both. So how have you guys felt like you've done, and you even mentioned like you take time to meditate in the dugout and to take that time. So that's what kind of has prompted this question. But how do you balance, you know, the amount of reps that they get, which they need to get a bunch, with the amount of game-like situations that they need, which also they need to get a bunch?
Yeah, I think, you know, the common analogy, or I guess, you know, hitters hit. So, you know, when you have hitters, they're going to hit on their own. You know, they're going to hit with their teammates. So in terms of the amount of reps, you know, that's kind of, you know, something that we look for on the recruiting side and, you know, something that just kind of is what it is. Like hitters hit, and they hit often, they hit a lot, and they're always in the cages. They're almost cage rats. But, you know, in terms of like what structured work that we have for them, you know, we definitely have to be cautious of, you know, how much time that they're on their feet, they're in the weight room. You know, we, building everything around practice, right? So I think to answer your question, like, you know, what matters the most today? You know, what's the overlying goal that we're going to accomplish today? Because I think whenever you set up practice with a goal in mind, like we want to accomplish, you know, we want to accomplish getting our best swing off as many times as possible today. And then what does that look like? I think you usually find your answer once you set a goal for practice. And then it kind of starts to fall into place of, does today need to be a day where we're swinging a lot more than we do normally do? Or is it today going to be a day where it's less work, we're more in the cages and we're trying to iron out some movement things in our swing, either that be something with our load or something with our bat path on that day?
No, that makes sense. It's not an easy balance. It depends on where you're at in the season, the amount of swings that they've taken, their legs, all of that stuff, which, you know, it's always good to hear. Some different things that other people are doing. So let's go to, you know, you guys are getting into the preseason. So let's say, you know, they come back from break and you're trying to, you know, you've passed the test of all of your players did nothing stupid over the break and they came back. And so they, you know, they're all passing their classes. They're good to go. What are some different things that you guys really focus on in January versus the things that you guys are focusing on before they leave for break? Because, you know, people handle their individual periods a little bit differently, I feel like. But talk to us a little bit about the difference between those two for you, and then we'll, I guess we can get into the preseason stuff after that.
Yeah, so I think when guys come from back from break, you know, you can tell right away who had a good break or not, you know. but for us, it's a lot about timing because, you know, we've done a lot of work, you know, kind of our process throughout the year. You know, we do a lot of, we kind of get under the hood of the car in winter, right? Like we kind of take the curtains back. We kind of get to the nuts and bolts and kind of make some adjustments in that winter time before they go home for break. And then, you know, once they come back, right, like we're trying to get ready to compete for a season. And so a big focus for us when guys come back in the preseason and getting into those preseason inter squads in the spring is timing. What does our timing look like? You know, for us here at Charlotte, like we believe that timing is a direct result of your load. How well are we loading? What does our load look like? What does our load look like when a pitcher is one to the plate? What does it look like when he's in the windup and he's got a big, you know, overhead delivery where, you know, he's pretty slow to the plate? Like those are the things that we kind of take a look at, and how can our swing be one, robust, but two, also deliberately focused on the pitcher's breaks and the timing that the pitcher gives us in order to get our swing off. Because if you're ready at release of the pitch, like I believe that you're on time and you're going to make good decisions. You're going to be in a good position to hit, and you're going to give yourself the best chance for success in the box. And so, you know, kind of go further into kind of the process for us here. You know, it's a lot of timing. It's a lot of video work. You know, we have a camera system right behind our home plate, and you know, I've even used my iPhone and iPad quite a bit. You know, what does the pitcher and hitter relationship look like, and what is our timing windows with each arm that goes out there? And then furthermore, you know, stressing that importance, you know, on deck in the hole and when we're just watching when we're the fourth or fifth guy up.
For sure. And so how do you teach that? So like we're saying, you know, you could see it on video, and give us a conversation to where you feel like, you know, I'm late, and it depends on the kid and the load and the pitch, all of that stuff. But kind of, if you don't mind, walk me through. Okay, so I come to you and I'm like, Phil, dude, I'm not seeing the ball well. I feel like I'm missing under everything, and everything looks really fast. And you're like, okay, hey, you're late. And then how would you go on with the rest of the conversation?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the first thing that we talk about, you know, the pitcher gives us essentially two windows of timing. You know, when a pitcher breaks his hands, he's normally, he starts his arm swing. And secondly, when a pitcher commits down the mound, when he begins that descent, you know, he's committing to the plate. Like somewhere in between there, we need to be ready to get into our load, and we need to get into our loading phase of the swing. Do we get to our fullest load in between those two points? Because if we do, then normally like we're ready to hit when the ball's coming out. And so, you know, some pitchers have different deliveries, some pitchers have different breaks, some pitchers start from a different point. And, you know, really what we talk about is watching the hand break and watching the pitcher commit down the mound, and somewhere along that line, like we need to get going. And so, you know, there's different cues, there's different focal points for each guy, obviously depends on each pitcher. But those are some things that we talk about with each arm that comes out onto the mound, and we give them a cue to focus on and put their eyes at.
Do you feel like that's made a massive difference? Because I think the more that I've really focused on, you know, what, especially in games, what the pitcher is doing and how his ball is moving, the better our hitters have been. Like, I know it sounds so elementary, but growing up, it's like, okay, like this is how his fastball moves. This is what his curveball looks like. This is when you need to go. It's like, oh, okay. Like that makes a ton of sense. And then I tried to overcomplicate things for about 10 years. And then I've slowly started to go back to, you know, those checkpoints. Are we swinging at good pitches, and are we moving on time? Like those are two fairly important things, I feel like.
Yeah, it's really easy. And, you know, you think about it too, like when you're coaching an offense, or, you know, if you coach the offense from the dugout, or you coach the offense from a base, like each arm gives you a tell. And, you know, being able to look at it from the lens of the pitcher's telling us when to get started, you know, we probably need to get started at that point. You know, it is elementary. It is very, if you want to call it simple, it's simple, but you know, it's important to know when to get started and what to focus on. Because if you just go to the, play, just kind of blindly guessing, and you know, you're not going to be on time for it. And, you know, it's something easy too, that, you know, you can watch on film if you have it. And it's something that, you know, you're able to tell when a guy's on time. You know, you can stand in the third base box and you yourself can tell when a guy's late or when a guy's early. But when you have a clear definition of timing for your program, for your offense, for your team, whatever it is, I think guys understand, I wasn't on time, so I need to get better on time. And then, you know, they're not worried about their swing because, you know, if you're late, your swing's going to break down. And so, you know, having a definition of timing has definitely been huge for us with developing our guys here.
No doubt. I'm right there with you. And, you know, we'll all get random videos from kids from time to time. And they're like, hey, what do you see? And it's like random side view video with no other context. I'm like, well, or even in game, I'm like, well, what was the pitcher throwing? What was the pitch? What, you know, what was the count? What was the situation that was going on into all of this stuff? Because, you know, like you said, if you're off time and you swing at bad pitches, it's going to influence literally everything else that you're doing. So, I love hearing that you're still having the same conversations with some of those college kids, because I feel like we're trying to beat our high school kids over the head with it quite a bit, actually, because they think it's simple, but it's very overlooked, I feel like.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, you think about the process that leads a hitter to competition. There's a thing called being in the hole. There's a thing called being on deck, and there's a thing called being in the box. And, mm-hmm. you know, for us, like those are three steps that lead us to the point of one-on-one with the pitcher. And how do we master that? You know, what is the mental process? What is our thought process going from, you know, in the hole to on deck to in the box? And like for us, like, you know, an analogy that we use is ATE, approach being when you're in the hole. You're looking at the scouting report. You're talking to one of your guys who just came in the dugout, what the pitch is doing. You're developing what you're going to try to approach this at bat like. You're watching the game. Is the situation kind of changing right in front of you, and formulating your plan? And then you go on deck, right? You're timing up the pitcher. You're focusing on the points to break and start your swing. And you're starting to get from your head into your body. Because, you know, you're not going to the plate thinking about everything that's going on. You're surely not thinking about all the stuff that could be on a scouting report, right? And then you go to the plate and you just execute. And I think that's something that's overlooked. You know, that's another thing, you know, for our offense this year was coming back in January, was, you know, I wanted us to be the best team in the country at that process right there. I wanted us to be really, really good when we were in the hole. I wanted us to be really, really good when we were on deck. And then I wanted us to be really good in the box. And I think putting an emphasis on those processes and those steps, you know, it helps guys, and it definitely helped us this year.
Oh, I love that. So one of the things that getting, especially like high school kids to buy into, is like the unselfish attitude of, okay, you just got out or you just struck out. Even and coming back and like getting over yourself to give other players information. Is that something that you guys work on, or is it just something that, you know, your guys have already built in and they already do that? Cause you know, it's, we have to get on our kids about, you know, pouting, one of those things, like, you know, bad body language, you're being selfish type things. So to combat that, like if you strike out, you come back, you give information to the next guy to try and get over that faster. So, and then trying to help them to communicate and come up with like a consistent communication system, because, you know, guys will see things differently, but at least putting into categories what things felt like and whether or not those are right, you're at least more prepared whenever you go into the box than, you know, it says, because we can look at video, we can look at TrackMan numbers, you can look at different things like that. And you can find some of that stuff online, even in high school, but it's always different when you get into, I would say it's always different. It is different at times when you step into the box, and even players have different feelings in those. So how do you help them with that process?
Well, I think that's kind of the job of a hitting coach, right? You think about hitting, like you're not going to make a swing change during the game. And so really the nuts and bolts of my job during a game is to, you know, pay attention to the body language, pay attention to what's going on in between pitches, pay attention to the communication that's going on in the dugout between hitters. You know, because, you know, there can be times where one guy sees a fastball that's got some ride to it and the other guy sees it as sink, and that's just how they see it. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. Surely, right? Because if the hitter sees it one way and another hitter sees it the one way, that's the way they see it. And so it's kind of controlling your personnel. You know, there's some guys that are always going to see eye to eye. They're going to talk in the same way. And there's going to be some guys that don't. And, you know, usually when you kind of have a free, open communication with everybody and your hitters and the coach as well, like usually the one guy gravitates to the other guy that is communicating one thing or another. And, you know, it's a lot of facilitating the environment for people to share freely, but also share what they think is important to one another. And so, you know, it looks like a lot of listening really on my part, a lot of listening and a lot of confidence building to kind of sense where everybody's head's at and put everybody in the right frame of mind to, you know, if they just struck out, to go back in the field and compete and go make a play in the field and then come back and, you know, win their next at bat.
No, I really like that. That's good. So, okay, we talked about, you know, timing. We got into, you know, the preseason aspects of it. And, you know, what are some of your favorite ways to train some of those things? So, ideally, we would get every single rep versus a live pitcher on a mound in a game-like situation. But what are some different ways? Like, I don't know how bad the weather is there, but a lot of places around the country, and you guys have better weather than most, but we'll be inside and a lot of it will be either BP or machines. So would you mind sharing just a couple of different, you know, ways that you guys try and train in the preseason to try and mimic what you're going to see in a couple weeks?
So with, you know, in terms of practice, like we want all of our practices to be aligned with what's important to us. And, you know, just making good decisions in the plate is really important. Being a team that has a high contact rate is really important to us, and being a team that hits the ball hard is really important to us. And, you know, kind of with those three in mind, like, you know, making good decisions in the plate is something as simple as, you know, a tandem drill that we do in the cages where, you know, we can't have TrackMan in the cages, right? And, you know, we can't have the zone awareness in there, but what we can have is we can have the feeder, we can have the next guy up telling exactly where the pitch is. You know, that's something that we've done a lot with some plyo balls and with plyo flips where, you know, guys are getting flipped and they're getting different colors of baseballs thrown at them. They have to call out the color of the baseball and they have to call out the color or the location of each pitch. You know, getting each guy to get out of their body and get into verbalizing where each pitch was, I think is something that's really, really beneficial. And, you know, another thing that we like to do a lot here is, you know, we like to challenge the point of contact. And so is that making, you know, the bat smaller? You know, we've used a lot of PVC pipes as bats and that's something that I really, really believe in. And, you know, you think about the game of Batia down in the Dominican Republic, like those kids in the island are swinging broomsticks and they're hitting seeds and they're hitting bottle caps. And, you know, why can't we do that here in the States? Why can't we shrink the bat and have guys hit smaller objects? You know, I think that's something that's so simple. You can go to Walmart and pick up a bunch of PVC pipes, cut them in 32 inches and make a little bat out of it. And you're making guys swing a smaller bat and maybe they're swinging the same size, you know, tennis ball, or they're swinging a smaller baseball, like a little golf ball pee shot. But I think that's something that, you know, if you add that layer into practice, that can definitely help. And, you know, finally, like, you know, developing guys that have bat speed, developing guys that have intent, like, you know, demanding that each hitter gives you his best swing, I think is one of the best bat speed programs out there. I think it's one of the best ways to train your hitters. When you demand that they give you their best on every single swing, whether that be on the tee, that be on flips, that be on a double big hack that's shooting, you know, downward angle fastballs, like whatever it is, like demanding that each hitter gives you his best day in and day out, like you're going to see guys' bat speed go up. You're going to see their intent go up and you're going to see their overall production go up.
Oh, really good. Do you, you said you guys use video quite a bit. How do you use it in training that is, you know, beneficial? And, you know, I'm always looking for ways to save time. So again, ideally you're watching a swing and you tell a guy X, Y, or Z, they get it and then they move on. But in the real world, you've also, you know, I've seen guys with mirrors, but, you know, mirrors in an indoor with 40 kids and different sports is not exactly practical. So we started using, you know, the video delay app, which is pretty good too, but, you know, getting guys and to help you know, with their instant feedback and also like the self-reflection between rounds is really big for amateur players. Because like I said, a lot of guys will get in and they'll take like, you know, 30 swings unless you limit them. And it's more activity than achievement. And it's a lot less of like that introspection and the, hey, how does my body feel right now? So I just went in a rabbit hole just now, but how do you use video in training, and do you have any advice for me on how to use it effectively?
Yeah, I think that the video feedback's a great tool. I think there's a lot of guys that love seeing their swing in real time, and they also love seeing it in between rounds. You know, I think one of the best things that we can use video for is seeing what's going on in between pitches. Like, how are guys getting back ready to get in the box? Because, you know, you think about a game, right? Like, a guy usually steps out of the box, he usually gets back in the box. Like, taking swing after swing in the cages, like, sometimes you just start to see guys either creep up on their toes and they kind of alter their posture, or they kind of get back on their heels. And, you know, really for video, for me, is like, how can we mimic what a game swing is going to look like? Because I think if you're using film in a cage, you're filming swings for a round to kind of get some video breakdown, like, you know, you need to step out and you need to step back into the box, because I think the way that you get in the box and the way that you set yourself up 5, 6, 7 seconds, I think that makes a huge difference in the way the swing's actually going to look and the way the swing can actually be. Because you're not going to take a round of 5 and 30 seconds ever in a game. You're just not. And so I think, you know, using video for that can be something that's really beneficial. And you can see that, no, I was actually like in a better posture there. I set my swing up in a different way because I gave myself time to get out of the box, but also get back in and get set ready to hit.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the phrases that we're going to use, you know, next year, just to bring that self-awareness, because, you know, the older players get, the more self-aware they are, and just using a word like reset, like, hey, reset, so that for every, you know, pitcher, catcher, infielder, it means step out, go through your routine, take a deep breath, get back in. And anytime we use that, you know, getting guys to be aware of that, because you've seen it too, you know, you've got guys that are literally like they're on their 30th swing and you're like, oh my gosh, like this guy's exhausted and his swing looks terrible. So, hey, reset, or get out of the cage, try again, you know, and limiting guys to that. We actually started to have to limit guys to 6 swings, because they'll take 25 or 30. And then you get one round in, then you rotate and the guys are like, hey, I didn't get any swing. Well, you know how that goes. Selfish ABs. So yeah. Be a good teammate. But anyways, with that, so I'm going to be ask a selfish question here too, and I know all the coaches up north will benefit from this too. But what are some ways that we can steal reps in a small space with hitting and still making them better? Like, we're not trying to do, because kids can smell you out really quickly. But I loved your idea of prep work, and I'm thinking, okay, again, going back to January, February, we're indoors. We've got varsity JV practicing together. We've got bullpens going, and there's very little space to steal some reps in. But we've also got like 6 to 8 guys in a station, because again, it is what it is. So what are some different ways that you, an advice or drills that you would give me in regards to like a situation like that, where we want them to become better hitters and to use their time wisely, but we have a very small space to do so.
Yeah, I love the next guy up and what that looks like. We're not standing, like, you know, let's say we're in a small cage. We're in a small single wide cage. The next guy up's acting like he's swinging. He's getting ready to swing. You know, obviously you can't have 10 guys swinging bats next to one another. That would kind of end in a bad catastrophe, right? But having the next guy outside of a cage, like, you know, having a live rep, having a live motion without actually being in the cage, like that's so simple and so easy to use. You can have 3 guys if you have 3 cages. If you have 2 guys, you have 2 or 2 cages, you have 2 guys that are standing behind the cage, ready for the next step. You know, even if it's RBP, even if it's on the tee. I think those are something that are simple and tangible as well. And then, you know, you mentioned mirrors earlier, like, you know, if you have a mirror, if you can get a mirror, anything that gives some type of reflection, like getting that inside a cage that's going to give an actual dry swing rep as well, I think is something that's great. And then finally, like, you know, I know we have iPads, I know we have TVs, I know we have phones, but, you know, having at bats, go on in an indoor setting. Like, you know, there's a lot of value in watching other people's failures. Like, we learn best from, you know, we can learn a lot on the expense of others from other people's failures. And so, you know, you put on a series of at bats in an indoor during a cage day, like, make your hitters watch baseball. You know, there's still some guys, you know, even at our level that, you know, they don't watch a ton of baseball, and there's so much to learn, you know, the nuances of the game, how people are pitching one another. I think watching it, you know, can add a lot of value to your practice.
No doubt. And then you're fighting short attention spans, which is what teenagers usually have, about 10 seconds. What do I say? A goldfish has like 8-second attention spans, and so do teenagers. Is that something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, crazy. All right. So let's see. So let's talk about the mental side actually a little bit. So you talked about your routines, and you talked about, you know, going through at bats with each other and communicating. What are some other, you know, pillars that you guys really try and hit hard on with the mental side?
Yeah, you know, I think thing for us that, you know, with the mental game, like, how can we be the best at learning from our own failures on top of other failures, on top of others' failures, on top of other teams' failures? And how can we learn, like, how do we handle ourselves when things don't go well, when we are 0 for 4 or when we are 0 for 5? And so, you know, I think in terms of the mental game and how guys can approach it, like, you know, this game is really, really hard, and we fail a lot at this game. And, you know, accepting that first and foremost is the first step, right? But the second step is like going through these mental games, going through these failures, and looking at it from a lens of like, hey, like, we're all hitters, and we're all going to fail more often than not. And how can we get better at that? And so, you know, with in terms of the mental game, it's one of those things that, you know, we have to be constant with our messaging. We have to be constant with what we're talking about, and constantly in what we're believing. And I think that's kind of the big thing.
So Phil, you are 26 years old. So I know you've been through a lot of the different changes within like baseball, like your whole life, right? So you've gotten, you know, you're in the information age of baseball. And so I want to know, like, how do you balance like all the things there are to do with doing a few simple things really well? Because I feel like, you know, watching you from afar, you've gotten really good at that the last couple of years, if that makes sense. And I hope that you use that as a compliment, but like hearing you talk about, okay, we used to do this and now we are doing X, Y, Z, we're theming days, and we're really focusing on, you know, a couple of things. So, you know, what are some things that you have really like, does that make sense at all? Like trying to like taking all of this information and simplifying it into a few things. I think you've done an awesome, awesome job at that. What are some things that, you know, that you, if you have somebody in your similar situation where they see all of these different things, and what would your advice to them be for somebody, you know, similar age, they see all of this stuff, they've grown up with all of this different stuff. How do you help simplify with what you guys have, where you're at right now?
I think you have to remember what it's like. And I think that's one of the, you know, one thing that I think I am very, you know, I'm very, very cognitive is, you know, I am 26. I remember what it's like to be 21 and 22. Shoot, I remember what it's like to be 18, 19, 20, or, you know, even in high school. You know, this stuff's really, really hard. And you know, I was reminded that my whole playing career, I was not a very good collegiate baseball player. I was reminded of that. And so I think, you know, taking all this information and always basing your decisions on what is actually important is the first, you know, you have to have a guiding light. You have to have a North Star that's going to direct you in terms of every day when you make a practice plan, is this aligned with my North Star? When you evaluate a player, is this aligned with my North Star? And something that, you know, I have written on my wall in my office is substance over style. Substance rules. Substance is the foundation of everything. Style is the way that you can do it, I can do it, you know, any other coach can do it. And so that's something that I look at quite a bit in my office to remind myself that, you know, the substance is what we are, and, you know, what actually matters to, you know, having a coaching philosophy, taking in all this information, because we are in an information age. There's so much out there. There's a lot of smart people out there. And there's a lot of different ways to do things. But I think, you know, going back to your question, like having that North Star, having a reason for what you believe in and what you do, you know, makes things a little bit more simple and, you know, kind of gets the thing rolling.
Hey, here's a off the cuff question for you. So you're in the middle of the season and you've got, you know, your lineup is pretty much set. How do you continue to develop guys that aren't playing every day in a, you know, develop them long term, but also keep them game ready in case their number is called? So saying, like, you know, your fourth outfielder, your fifth outfielder that may play once a week, or, you know, even like the guy that's a little further on the depth chart that you think has a ton of ability, but he's not going to help this year. So how do you help them to continue to develop, but also stay locked in, stay game ready? And I think it's a credit to you too that you said, hey, I remember what that was like. I wasn't very good and it wasn't that long ago. And so I can empathize with that. But what's your advice on, because those are the kids that are really tough, because you don't want them to transfer because you love them and you believe in them. But you're also like, okay, like this is what it is this year. So how do I keep them locked in and ready to go?
Yeah, I think you instill a belief in them and you have a genuine belief in yourself and them that they're the future starter, that they are going to help you. They might help you 2 months from now in a regional because we needed them to pinch run, or we needed them to come get a sack bunt in. Like, we needed them in the game. Like, refusing to believe that nobody on your team cannot help you. I think, you know, instilling that in your players is how you interact with them. And that gives them confidence that at some point that they are going to make the difference in a game. You know, in terms of the tangible things, like in practice, like, you know, live at bats, you know, we like to get our guys a ton of live at bats when they're not getting those at bats in the game. And, you know, keeping them just a part of the process with everything, you know, is that in the dugout, is that them keeping charts, you know, some of our, you know, our 15th and 16th hitter, those are the guys that are keeping the chart. They're keeping the pitch chart in the dugout. Keeping them engaged in the game, keeping them near the guys that are actually playing closer to the dugout. You know, with us here at Charlotte, we actually, as coaches, we position ourselves in the middle of the dugout. And that's something that Coach Woodard had us do this year. And I think it's great because it gets the players closer to the action. You know, you have the players as close to the batter's box as possible. You have them right next to the guy that's about to go hit. You have them be the first ones out of the dugout. And that gets them involved in the game. That gets them feeling that they're right there when their number's called, that they're ready to go.
I love that. And then that, I'm sure that creates ownership and part of that team cohesiveness too. And, you know, it's something that I worry about, especially with injured guys too, of, you know, as guys that have a season ending injury and then they isolate themselves, and that, I mean, God, I hate that part too. And trying to keep those guys involved and to still feel a part of the group, even though they're not contributing every day.
Yeah. You know, it's, you know, everybody that steps foot in our program is a Charlotte 49er, and they are going to help us. You know, being a good teammate helps us win games. Being the first guy to the field helps us win games. Being the last guy to leave at night helps us win games. Those things matter. And those things are, you know, good. Those things are rewarded to those players. And time after time, you know, it's the small stuff that adds up in large sums.
Oh, really good. Well, I've got some quick hitters for you before you go. And, you know, let me be the first to say thank you for coming on and sharing so much. And I've really appreciated the conversation. I love it. And you're making me better. So I hope you feel the same way. But what's the latest thing that you've learned that's made you a better coach?
Yeah, I think the latest thing that I've learned really is just being a young coach, like observe each team that we play. Because I think there's something to add and to look at and to learn from every single team we play. I mean, I love watching opposing teams BP. I'm fascinated by batting practice, and I love watching to see how guys operate, what they're focusing on, what rounds are they doing. You know, what's it like in between the cages? What's it like with a coach to players? Or, you know, is there some swing instruction? Is there some verbal cues? Is there a lot of just confidence building, a lot of hype and energy? You know, I think that's something that this past year, you know, we played a lot of good teams this year. And watching opposing teams' batting practice is something that I kind of doubled down on this year to kind of see how everybody else does it. And, you know, that's something that I think that's made me a better coach and made me a better hitting coach in the way that I interact with our guys in between rounds, what I say in between swings, and what it actually feels like on the field before you go out and compete that night.
Love that. Second question is, what's a drill or competition that your players love that we can steal from you?
I love two strike rounds in BP. I love two strike rounds in BP. And, you know, how can we handle the fastball? How can we handle the best pitcher's velocity? You know, if that's a pitcher that throws, you know, his best fastball is 85, or that's a pitcher that throws 100, like, how can we handle that in BP, and what does our swing look like? And having that focus in each of our rounds, you know, during a game day BP or even a BP setting, having a round that's dedicated to strikes, I think is super, super valuable.
I love that. And I love striking out our guys when we do mixed BP like that. It's great.
Oh, yeah.
So we actually, on that, we bought one of those really small, I don't want to say really small, but one of the smaller K zones with like a red outline. Yeah. And it's like instant feedback. I don't know if you guys use something like that for swing decisions, but I thought that was a really good one too.
We do. We actually, this year we made kind of a handmade home plate where we grabbed some of our old turf and we put a green strip right down the middle of the plate. Because that's, you know, in terms of, for us, we wanted to focus on what we were swinging at, not what we don't want to swing at. And so we put a green strip down the middle of a plate, and it gave the hitters a visual of, I'm going to own the middle of the plate. Anytime that the pitch is over the middle of the plate, I'm looking for it here, I'm going to hammer it. And so that's kind of on the same, you know, same thing with that, giving the hitter a, you know, visual to focus on.
I love that. So last one I've got for you before we let you off the hook. What are some resources that have made you a better coach?
Ooh, lately I've been listening to a lot of Lex Friedman podcast. I think he has some fascinating guests on that show. You know, I love listening to a good story. And, you know, that podcast has people from all over the world, scientists, you know, artificial intelligence, you know, researchers. You know, I think the last podcast had Matthew McConaughey on it. I think that one was pretty awesome. So any time that I can listen to that, you know, that's been a huge resource. Just kind of opens up my mind and my eyes to other things that might relate or might not relate to baseball.
Oh, that's good. Well, Phil, I know you are going to have some people reach out or try and reach out to you. Where can they find you on, just in case they want to get in touch with you and ask you any questions?
Yeah, Twitter's a great way. My email is psebahar@charlotte.edu. Would love to talk with anybody. Shoot me a DM, shoot me an email, and, you know, I'll make sure and get back with you.
I love it. Well, Phil, again, thanks for being on the show. Is there anything else that you want to talk about or anything else that you want to talk to our listeners about before you go?
No, just appreciate the time and appreciate what you do for the game of baseball. You know, I've been listening to this podcast, you know, back when I think in 2018, 2019, when I first started listening to it, and it's been a huge resource for me. So thank you for putting this thing together and having on such great guests and putting together good episodes.
Thank you so much for listening to Ahead of the Curve. If you would do us a huge favor, leave a rating or review wherever you are listening. And if you enjoyed this episode, share it with someone and tag us on social media. That would help us so much with growing the show and helping others to stay ahead of the curve.